Well, in recent times, there have been a debate over the menace of the Almajiri system.
Well, the system is said to predate British colonialism, where children acquire Islamic knowledge in Quranic schools, but it has also been associated with begging.
Well, for a long time, there have been discussions on what to do with the system. While some people want a scrapping of the Almajiri system, others want the system to remain.
The last administration was the first to take practical steps in solving the problems associated with the system by establishing Almajiri schools and handed it over to the state governments.
Well, some leaders, including the governor of Kano State, Abdullahi Umar Ganduje, floated the concept of Almajiri schools and advocated its integration into the normal school system.
Well, the debate on what to do with the Almajiri system is our talking point at this time. Mr. Zan Kakati, the African voice. We are joined by Engineer Mwansi Magadi, who is Vice President of Almajiri Empowerment Foundation. Please have you join us.
Thank you for having me.
And joining him as well is Idris Yunus, President of Muslim Youth in Dahwahi. Welcome.
Nice to have you both join us this morning. First of all, let's educate our viewers a little bit. Let's talk about what the Almajiri system really is. Explain it to us very briefly.
Well, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. So, there are certain two people. There is a system of education that is operating at that time. And that system of education is all about the Quranic and other religious education. When I say Quranic and other religious education, it's not all about the Quranic education alone.
Mm.
It has to do with other aspect of knowledge, like mathematics, they call it ilmul hisab, and medicine, ilmul atib, and many aspect of education. But the pure Quranic education is just a bedrock. It's just a bedrock by that time.
Mm.
Before you graduated to that advanced level of education, what you go through is to study the entire Holy Quran.
Well, we'll just put a pause there. Let's introduce our other guests from our Bauchi Center. We have joining us from Bauchi, an Islamic scholar. His area of specialization is Islamic education. He has a degree in international studies, and he is at the moment studying for a second degree. He is the son of the popular Sheikh Dahiru Usman Bauchi. And thank you very much for joining us. Sayyidi Bashir.
Thank you, sir. Assalamu alaikum.
Yeah, we can see you acknowledging us there, so that means you're hearing us. We'll come to you shortly. You have to give us your thoughts, your opening thoughts on what really this process is all about, the Islamic education you were giving us explanations on that.
Yeah, so exactly what happened during the colonial era. Now, there is introduction of another system of education which is not directly opposite of the Islamic education, if there is perfect understanding by the people then. And when this education was introduced, the people that are, you know, that are practicing this Islamic education, they felt that something new have arrived, and because of that, it was not easy for them to integrate and accept. And most of them now decided to at least move away from the Western education. But by then, there is an issue. What really happened is that the authorities by then try to penetrate the Almajiri system by then, and because before the advent of the Europeans, it is the government of that northern part of the country that do take care of those students, because there is no any system of education by them, only that Islamic education.
Mm.
And so at that time, it is only when you are in that system of education, you are taught to be a student. Mm. And so when the European now come, the European are no more sponsoring them. But by that time, it is the government that is sponsoring them.
That's their imaginary system.
Yeah. And but you know, when things now turn around and they could not see any sponsors, that is why most of them have to go to the street.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now happened that it is only the wealthy individuals and the people that have their sympathy now decided to be giving them certain assistance for them to continue that education. So we didn't come we didn't come quick to arrest the situation and maybe to tell them that, look, there is no disparity between anything when we call it education. Education is education. Because Islamically, you don't look at, and you can't look at any knowledge and say that this knowledge is superior or inferior. The most important thing is that you are knowing something. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to date. And when something now, you know, take a long period of time, it become a disease. Even if such a thing initially is not a disease.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened, because mm-hmm. you continue to be begging for their support. The real reason why they are begging is for support. Meaning they want to get support to continue the education. But
you know, just like you have rightly pointed out, it's been left alone for too long.
Yeah.
No decisions were made, nothing was done. The imaginary went to the streets, and they have been on the street now for decades, and so it has remained. The question for me now is, why did it stay that way? Those who were in charge of the imaginary system of education, did they not see that this was a problem? And what has been the process towards finding a solution and bringing these imaginary students back into the larger society where they can learn both the Quranic way and the Western education as well?
Well, thank you very much. Like Sheikh Ibu said, this issue around the resources and necessity of life. We need to understand that this is an institution, like you rightly said, predates the colonialism. It's a knowledge institution. It's a religious institution. Now, when the colonials came to Northern Nigeria, they adopted an indirect rule because of the deep-rooted cultural background of that society. What we didn't adopted was the knowledge system that is used to teach people, because that institution was religious-based. You need to understand the totality of Islamic society is focused on the religion is life. Basically, it involves politics, economics, and the pursuit of human endeavor, not just about faith. Now, if you take, for example, it's similar to the seminary institution at the university. So this is an institution that the parents believe that if a child attends, comes out as a complete human being. He learns his faith, he also is supposed to learn language education, and also have social skills. Now, when the Western education came, it decoupled social skills and language education from the Quranic system, and left the Quranic education to just teach basic knowledge of faith. Now, because there's no resources, there's no system, there's no curriculum, that institution went underground and became the monopoly of individual interpretations and the malams. Mm-hmm.
And the community just brings some help. However, because population has also grown,
mm-hmm.
but the malams can't cope with the number of students in this care. The parents have no structure of paying school fees. And also, you need to understand that it's children of the happy that call Al-Majid, even the same Al-Majid. You don't want to be called that name. Don't call him Al-Majid. He's not happy with it. Even though he will say it, but he's not happy with it. And when you tell him you go to school, you don't want to. But meet him where he is. Put the system, you know, try to at least amend that system and give him certain help. There are certain things in the mud that if you didn't understand a woman murderer, then you will not do justice to him. One of the things about a murderer is that he wants you to respect what he's doing. and don't go against it. Then you try to bring, just like they say that when you want to bring any change, you don't just go and condemn what people are doing, but try to support what they are doing, and at the same time, bring your own change into it.
Interesting. Let's have Sayedin Bashir from Abuja Center to join us now. We've been having some technical problems trying to connect with you, Bashir, but I think we can see you now. What are your thoughts? I'm sure you hear some of our guests here in the studio, what they've been saying about this particular subject. I want to find out from you, what is the status of our Madrasa system, Islamic education, in the context of the present society which we live today?
الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد الفاتح الخاتم وعلى آله قدم دار العظيم السلام عليكم as the topic suggests, I mean the origin, the reform options, let me start with the origin. The origin, we need to define Al-Madri first and foremost for us to know where it originated from. Al-Madri initially is not an Hausa word. It's an Arabic word. The word means al-muhajir in Arabic. It's not a Hausa word, it's an Arabic word. Al-muhajir is a subject of a verb. The verb is hajara, yuhajiru, muhajir. The verb means somebody who migrated from a place to a place. That is what the verb means. And the subject of the verb is muhajir. Somebody who migrated from his hometown in quest of Islamic knowledge. But originally, however, the Holy Quran called al-muhajirun, that he termed a particular class of people as muhajirun because of the fact that they migrated along with the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, from Mecca to Medina. They followed him on his historic journey of migration from Mecca to Medina. And when they arrived in Medina, that's how the word originated from. I mean, muhajir, somebody who migrated. That is why in the text of the Holy Quran, we can see it vividly in the chapter, the woman, also to Nisa, where the Almighty Allah said, وَمَنْ يُهَاجِرْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ يَجِدْ فِي الْأَرْضِ مُرَاغَمًا كَثِيرًا وَصَعًا وَمَنْ يَخْرُجُ مِنْ بَيْتِهِ مُهَاجِرًا إِلَى اللَّهِ وَرَسُولِهِ ثُمَّ يُدْرِكُ الْمَوْتُ فَقَدْ وَقَعَ أَجْرُهُ عَلَى اللَّهِ. That whoever migrated in the course of Allah, certainly the Almighty Allah promised him abundance in everything. Whoever migrated from his hometown to join the Almighty Allah and his apostle in establishing the religion, then the Almighty Allah guaranteed his full reward on his arrival in the year after. That's how it started. So when they migrated to Medina, it's very important for us to know that they left all their belongings in Mecca, including their houses, their land, their properties, their everything. In fact, they survived only with their lives. Upon their arrival, the Prophet ﷺ established a unique system of brotherhood between them and the indigenous Muslim of Medina. That is what they call Al-Mu'aka. In this brotherhood, the Prophet ﷺ gave to each and every Ansar a brother from Muhajirun. Said, this is your brother, so therefore you should go home and share everything you have with him on equal basis. Houses, farmland, everything. In fact, even clothing materials. Everything material. And that is how those brothers, those indigenous Muslims of Medina who were so delighted with this brotherhood took and embraced their migrating brothers and took them to their homes, to their respective homes, and showed them what they own for them to choose. In fact, as we can see from the tradition rendered by Imam al-Bukhari in his collection on the authority of Abdullah.
I know the origin you're trying to establish is clear. You're trying to establish the religious roots to this particular problem. But where I want you to come to is the contemporary situation we have on ground in Nigeria today. We have millions of young children roaming the streets in the name of imaginary education, and they are called imaginaries. What we want to find out is what really is the status of that, what relevance does it have, and what really can be done to change the situation of these children for their future in Nigeria?
That is when you come to the reform option, right? When we talk about the reform option, we need to know the origin, of course, but because of the time factor, I know I cannot go beyond this in explaining the origin, the religious root. And actually, the culture of begging for having the children roaming the streets begging. Let's look at the begging as a culture. Begging or al-Majri, as I said earlier, originally means those who devoted their lives and their future to the learning of Quranic education. That is the concept of al-Majri, until when they finish their memorization. When they finish, they can go into other things like we memorize, alhamdulillah, at our early age. And of course, later on, we went into Western education. And what I want us to understand here is that for some people to say al-Majri is un-Islamic, they must have ignored the word al-Majri first and foremost. If they make reference to what happened on our streets today, that this begging is un-Islamic, that to allow people to beg is un-Islamic, I'm afraid they cannot have any basis either in the Holy Quran or in the tradition of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, unless a sufficient alternative provision is made for them. You cannot stop them from begging, because the Almighty Allah said in the Holy Quran, وَأَمَّا السَّائِلَ فَلَا تَنْهَرْ. A beggar, you shouldn't shout at a beggar, at anyone begging. You should either give him, or you should give him a nice word. قَوْلٌ مَعْرُوفٌ وَمَكْفِرَةٌ خَيْرٌ مِنْ صَدَقَةٍ يَتْبَوَى أَذَى. That to give him a nice word, and to give him what you can afford to give him is better than to give him whatever you can give him, then you give him a bad tongue, that is, you insult him. So, and we have it in the tradition of the Holy Quran, of Islam, that begging is not something to be scorned at. It's not something that should be considered as backwardness. After all, even in the so-called advanced nations, people beg there. Everybody knows that in London, even in Westminster, you have beggars. So I wonder how people tend to ignore the reality of the situation of human beings. Of course, those who beg must be under pressure of necessity to beg, for them to beg. What the Holy Quran frowns at it for somebody, for a able-bodied, healthy person to take to the streets begging, because that will undermine the productivity of the society.
We'll come back to you, Sheikh Bashar, much later, but some of the feelers we're getting from what he's saying seems to be that the system is okay. Well, is it okay? Would you describe this kind of system as an okay system?
Well, let me say this. I'm not an Islamic scholar, but I have a very serious issue here. The Sultan of Sokoto said that the Al-Majri begging system is not Islamic. Sheikh Saeed Bashir, representing an institution in our religion, said it is wrong to say begging is un-Islamic. Now, the quotes for Saeed Bashir were God Almighty mentioned Hijra, where the name Muhajir came from, and Al-Majri was derived from. Is actually a contextual verse referring to the migration of the Meccans to Medina and the reward that is derivable from those migrants, and therefore also applying to the holistic Islamic Ummah, where you are oppressed, suppressed, and denied the freedom to practice your religion. So it's a different context. I also want to remind Sheikh that in the little knowledge that I have, that our Prophet said the hand that gives is greater than the hand that receives. So where do you want to be? Lesser or greater? Are we encouraging our society to be lesser by the day or greater? Now, my whole problem with this is, I hear Sheikh speaking very polished English, and I would like all the Northern kids to be like him. That is my aspiration in social development context. What we're doing in our foundation is to say every kid deserves opportunity like Sheikh Bashir. That say Bashir has privileges, but every kid should have privileges. But Northern Nigeria should actually claim role models like Sheikh Bashir to understand Islam, understand his faith, and be able to have social skills and the knowledge to interact like he has just done with us and the rest of the world. This is just the argument here, but how do we get there?
All right, that's where we're going. Now, we identified earlier that there's been some sort of division between the community, the government, and the Western education, to bring a way, to find a way, a holistic way of including the Almajiri system into modern ways, so as not to lose sight of what's more important. Now, we also were talking about the previous administration's efforts in educating or improving the Almajiri system. Let's quickly look at, in terms of forge ahead, we need to know what went wrong with that effort. Why you say it failed, and what we can do better?
Fundamentally, the issue of penetration and intervention comes in. The joint administration genuinely wanted to resolve the issue of Almajiri, and I think the history, I was part of the planning team. What I had many people say is, when we went to the campaign, we looked out of the window of our air-conditioned buses and cars, and we see this massive Almajiri population with torn clothes, with plates in their hands, and it's inhuman to have such very, very dynamic population, yet not catered for. Now, they don't understand the dynamics of the humility, the building. They don't understand. This is social development perspective. That's what leaders should do, right? So they came up with an intervention approach and said, look, can we take these kids off the street? That's the fundamental objective. Now, what they didn't do was the social research to understand the need assessment of that institution. And Sheikh Idris's outline, if you go into an institution as orthodox as the Almajiri institution, you don't ram a model into their thoughts. You don't turn them like you. You ask them what do they need. You have an objective. Your set objective is take them off the street, let them be productive. There are millions of products of Almajiri today that have passed the stage of intervention in terms of classroom. What do you do with us? Because they don't have certificate, no social contract with the system. If you call for an intervention or an empowerment screening, you can't get any one of them in the room, because they can't even access that. You will say school leavers, minimum school leaver. They don't have school leaver certificates. So the point here is simple. There are categories that currently there is the Almajiri school going on. The intervention was, do they need a classroom? Or do they need something to clean them up, give them literacy? What do you want to achieve? Take them off the street so they have to feed, meaning resources is required to feed them, they are citizens. Then give them literacy, skills, computer, literacy of education, mathematics, things that will allow them to, after memorizing the Quran, go to the further.
In other words, you need to pull them out of the street, into the classroom.
No, you
don't need to make
them
better where they were.
Pull them out of the street, but not into classroom. Put them where they are and structure where they are.
Now,
fit into a model that deliver what you want.
Now, let's talk
very
about
important.
Let's talk about where they are now. Sheikh Guinness, what is a typical Almajiri center like? And is it possible, whatever it is, to be fashioned in the short term into what may look like a classroom situation which might appeal to them?
What may look like a learning center?
A learning center.
Very
in
important.
The classroom.
Very important.
Well, first of all, before you go ahead, what's the difference to them or for them between a learning center and a classroom? Why would it make any difference? Why is it such a big deal for them?
Yeah, to me, because we are enlightened, we don't see any difference. But to them, who we are trying to save, there is a difference. You know, they don't want to live their traditional way of doing things. And when you want to confront somebody and change his life, respect his traditional way of doing things. If you take him away immediately from his traditional way of doing things, you are creating a vacuum between you and him.
But the issue again is, who's forcing this thought and perception? Because most of these Amajimis are young children of 3, 4, 5 years. Is it the scholars who are running the Islamic school, the Islamic Amajimi system,
mm-hmm.
that are forcing the, are they the people that need their perception mm-hmm. changed?
Thank you so much. You know, I want to come back a little. Please. You know, what's really happened? You see, there is still disparity between whether you can beg or you cannot beg, and the scholars are saying one thing or the other about it. You know, people are not even able to differentiate between begging and beggars, because they are so different. During the lifetime of the Holy Prophet, there are no beggars, but people do beg. Meaning you beg when there happens to be an issue,
the need.
But when there is no issue and no any immediate need, you are not expected to beg. So the question beggar does not exist. Islamically, begging is allowed when there is an issue. And only when you fall under three categories of people, as said by the Holy Prophet himself. One, I'm just giving an example. One, when you are a farmer and a calamity befalls you are, farm produce. You know, in the village settings whereby we are all farmers, we cannot do anything, we only feed from what we sow.
In other words, your life
has been to fall on them. Then the Prophet said that you are at liberty to go outside and beg to get what you will eat. Then you what? Hold your arms and stop begging. Meaning, when you beg for food now, when you are satisfied, it is also prohibited for you to beg. Unless otherwise, when you are hungry again.
And we're having a system where where there is a continuous begging process.
That is,
and some people are saying this begging, at the end of it, returns are made to whoever is in charge of their Amajimi school, which the young children
That is where I'm trying to land. I say the second category of people is a person that transpire a debt upon himself. When I say you transpire a debt, somebody is in a crisis, maybe he's about to be taken to a court or to a police station because he cannot pay his debt. And now you decided to say, okay, let me transpire his debt upon myself. And you transpire the same debt upon yourself, and you don't have money to pay. Then the Prophet says, okay, you can go and beg so that you get money to settle, because you are saving his soul. Then the third one, he said that you must, in a situation whereby maybe you are in an abject poverty, you cannot feed yourself, and by doing that, there must be, you know, people, decent people from your family that will testify before the public that you are in a very dire situation. Then the Prophet said that you can beg and get what you need. Then you hold on. He said, beside these three categories, any person whosoever that go out and beg, did you get it clear? He says, "Suhu to be akulu husahibu husahota," meaning you are only putting hellfire into your belly. Meaning it's prohibited. That's why the Prophet said that whosoever continue begging, in the day of judgment, you will come out. In the day of judgment,
according to Islam now, it's not right to say people should be beggars.
When you are a beggar, you are totally against the religion. But when you beg, it depends on the situation you
survive.
When
you beg, everybody beg. We beg, you beg, everybody beg. Sometimes it's
just a different form of begging.
It's all begging. It depends on how you say. But you make it as a profession, it's totally haram. But what is said in Islam, you don't despise a beggar. When somebody comes begging, because you don't know who he is. But when it comes to your knowledge that person, if you really take that begging as a profession, then you have to despise him.
Well, which seems to be what is going on. But let's get a quick reaction from Sheikh Bashar from our Bounty Center to some of the things that has been said here already. Your colleagues here in Abuja are disagreeing that the Almajiri system as it is obtainable at the moment in Nigeria should continue. You are a graduate. You're studying postgraduate for postgraduate degree as well. And the MBA in Abuja are also graduates as well, but they are still very versed in the Quran and in Islamic education. Is there anywhere we can create a balance out of this? The need for religious education and also the need to expose these millions of young Nigerians to the potential of engaging with the global community at a level where it is done in contemporary society.
Thank you very much. The most important thing that we need to understand here, first and foremost, is that I need to be understood that as my colleague mentioned, those who do not have any need to beg are not allowed to beg at all. But those children, initially, originally, it was a contract between the hosting society and the Almajis that came in. That was how it was initially. Just that, like I mentioned, the historical antecedents that when the Muhajirun arrived in Medina, they were accepted and accommodated by the indigenous people of Medina. That's what expected of the indigenous Muslim societies that are supposed to host the Almajiris. Whenever they eat, they must prepare something at least for them. Whenever they have excess of clothing material, you should give them. That's what is encouraged in Islam. Begging as a profession for those that are healthy and able-bodied is not allowed at all. And coming back to what you have mentioned, how to strike a balance and how to get them educated Islamically and to raise their standards so that they can be competent anywhere in the world. And for instance, I can give an example of our foundation here, Sheikh Dr. Usman Bojo Foundation, in which I happen to be the director of Dawah and Guidance and Counseling. In this foundation, we have over 150 schools spread across the country. And none of these schools have their pupils begging on the street at all. We have an excellent system of feeding and accommodation and everything. So we do not allow them to beg because we can afford to do that. But we cannot say that those who cannot afford it should be forced not to close their schools down. Rather, I will encourage, if you can allow me, I can tell you the sources of income that Islam established in the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam that can take care of these Almajiris without them begging. But when they beg, of course, they incur no guilt at all by begging because they are under pressure to beg. So the little you can do is to provide a sufficient alternative for them, that's an alternative provision for them. One of the sources is that zakah. The Holy Quran said, "Inna masalikatul fukara wal masakin wal amilin alayha," up to the end of the verse. The verse mentioned 8 categories of people that deserve to collect zakah. That is indigent, people that are extremely poor, faqir and miskin. So kind of differ on who is more desperate than who. Like scholars among them, Imam Abu Hanifa, are of the view that faqir is more. Is Imam Shafi. Imam Shafi hold the belief that faqir is more indigent and more desperate than miskin. He based his opinion on the ground that the Almighty Allah mentioned in the Holy Quran that miskin, al-masafinatu fakana li-masakin. A miskin can even own a whole ship, yet he is still graded as miskin. While faqir does not own such kind of thing as a means of livelihood. The other view was held by Abu Hanifa and those scholars who maintain the same view along with him, that miskin is more indigent. Anyway, let's not go into these technicalities. Zakah, one. Then secondly, we have the issue of ganima, that is spoils. Whenever there is an incidence of war, for instance, between then the booties of the war, one-fifth of the booty, that was during the time of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, one-fifth of the booty should be dedicated to the poor society, including, of course, al-majlis and so on and so forth. وَعَلَمُ أَنَّمَا غَنِمْتُ مِنْ شَيْءٍ فَأَنَّ اللَّهِ خُمُسَهُ وَلِلرَّسُولِ وَلِلْقُبَى وَلِلْيَتَامَى. Then there is another source of income, that is fai. Fai means that when there is any clash between the then Islamic State established by the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and those and the the other states that attack him. So if they were scared and run away, to whatever was realized from that encounter, one-fifth of it should be given to this class of society. Then we have so many other sources, jizya, and so on and so forth. So I think at the present time, that is our present condition, I can say that our model, that's in Sheikh Tariq Buti Foundation, has worked very well, that we have over 150 schools. No pupil of that school beg for feeding at all. They are all well taken care of. And of course, we accept members
of your school aren't begging. There are some others who are not that fortunate, who do not have the privilege, and whose hostels and wherever they are cannot afford to feed them, and the community probably where they are also situated are to impoverish themselves to think of these ones, you know, to help out. Let's wrap this all up. How do we help these children?
I think, in my view, there is a consensus. I'm really very happy you come out. What's coming out from Sheikh Bashir, because clearly what he has done is to say, you know what, let's contextualize this matter. The Al-Majri is a young child. Whose responsibility is it to take care of a young child? It's the parents and the society. So we have failed if we leave this child on the street. Simple. In their schools, they know it is their responsibility to take care of it. In the society, whose responsibility is it? Parents, leaders, government. Let's have a discussion on resourcing this institution. Simple. It is about resources. If you have the privilege to access resources, you can keep these kids out of the school. The Quranic education is a fantastic religious education. Let's give them skills. Let us resource how they will fend for themselves. A child who is hungry will definitely go and find food. Let's just provide the basic things of life. Clean up this environment in a hygienic form. Intervene, penetrate, and provide a sanitation environment. One of the major challenges of this Sangha, you ask the question, how does it look like? If you go there, you will see a large population of young children that are packed into a room that is probably not ventilated with a very, very low hygiene. And I think that is not part of the religion. Yeah? Hygiene is part of Iman. That's what Rasul said.
All right, how do we begin to take, how do we begin to make those who these children are under their care more responsible for them? Because if you lead these children to a certain person, he should be accountable for
now,
that
in
task.
In today's insular system, I think we have a launchpad. The Sultan has said it, and I'm very happy Sheikh Bashir has clarified that the institution of religious knowledge, the governors now need to seize the opportunity and get into the space. The fear of the politicians is the political emotion. There are two very solid apparatus today that has established the need for us to go in there, stop begging, and provide for these kids. The governors need to come into the room. I'm glad yesterday I saw my governor, Ganguly, on TV, basically saying the concept was wrong, the way it was approached. What is the right concept? Let us come up with the right
solutions,
and let us influence other governments to do the same.
Yeah.
I think this issue needs to be sustained to a point of action.
Mm. Okay, great. Sheikh Guinness, your final comment. Moving this system forward, like he said, how about restructuring, resourcing the Al-Majri schools that we have? And since, like you said, it's difficult to go and foist your own system, what we are used to, organize school and formal education system, is it realistic, is it possible that the Islamic Al-Majri schools that we have already make it a lot more formal, semi-formal, for instance, and combine with Quranic education and also secular education?
Get the ulamas. You get the ulamas. You bring them together. You organize timely seminar for them. Sometimes the problem government have been for the time.
The ulamas of Islamic teachers.
The ulamas of Islamic teachers. You get them. You bring them in. You organize seminars. And you assist them in with certainty that will encourage their studies. Period. They will be part of you and they will understand you better.
So you get their buying. That's very key.
Period.
Which is what apparently was lacking.
That's what's
lacking. Train the trainers.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Train the
What about the parents? What kind of orientation and responsibility should still go back to the parents?
That's
a situation where a child, a woman just gives birth and she's just, the child is two or three and you discard the child to somebody to take care.
I think the issue of the parent is just not about our hands, it's about legislation. Believe me sincerely, it is abdication of our responsibility to have many children and throw them out on the street. People do that as an act of irresponsible parenting. It is the responsibility of government to legislate that a Child Protection Act, which is holistic about the right of child to education and better way and quality of life, to encompass this begging as part of the provision of the act. The parents should be held responsible for the way and manner they drop a child in this world and have the child's brother. If they are incapable, the system can help, but in the structured legislative manner.
Fantastic. Well, it's been quite an exhaustive one, but this matter is known as exhaustive. Yes, we see how
it's far from being dealt with, really.
To talk about it. Well, thank you so much, Engineer Muazu Magaji, Sheikh Idris Yunis, and from our Bauchi Center, Sheikh Basha. Thank you so much. For
thank you, gentlemen. It's been nice having you join us, and we do hope that you're able to put everything, the structure in order, to revamp and the Al-Majri system and make it more effective. That has been our show this Thursday. Thank you so much for being a part of it. I'm Semami Ukyomohai.
I am Otobo Mohan. Kakaki returns on Friday. Have a wonderful day.